WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Many of us pride ourselves on being too smart to be manipulated by an ad. That's why so many TV ads today try to sell us with ironic winks, acknowledging that the advertisers know that we know what's going on. This is just one of the trends that Leslie Savin has been following. She writes the advertising column in The Village Voice. Her work is collected in the new book, The Sponsored Life: Ads, TV, and American Culture. She says that a lot of advertisers have learned that to break through to the all-important Boomer and Generation X markets, ads have to be as cool, hip, and ironic as the target audience likes to think of itself as being. I asked her for an example.
One is an ad that came out last summer and fall for Nike, the hippest of all advertisers. And this one had William Burroughs in it, the former beat poet, heroin addict. Most of the kids who watch this ad with William Burroughs don't know who he is, but what they do see is somebody who's sort of going against the grain. He's this old craggedy guy who comes out in a fedora hat and has this sort of grisly, weird voice and starts spouting about how technology will free the body and that its purpose is not to confuse, but it's in the service of the body. And he's appearing on little TVs and stacks of television sets, and he'll appear in a little micro TV set. And meanwhile, all these athletes, who are often athletes from previous Nike commercials, are intercut with him, and often they're other athletes are slamming the TV that he's on, slamming it around like a puck shot, and are sliding into it from a baseball game. And it's very confusing. And if you don't know what it is, as far as Nike's concerned, that's okay. That's cool.
Why don't we actually hear the ad that you're talking about?
Okay.
Hey, I'm talking to you. Purpose of technology. Not to confuse the brain, but to serve the body. To make life easier, to make anything possible. It's the opening of the door. It's the coming of the new technology.
Do you feel any better about ironic ads?
Than I do about other advertising?
Yeah, because they're saying, hey, look, we know we're trying to sell you something, and they're winking at you. Do you think that they're any less manipulative?
They're more interesting to watch, the desperate ploys they go through in order to appeal to me or to other people who are supposed to be cool or want to be cool. But no, I find them more repugnant, frankly. I think they're... It's the highest insult, in fact, to tell me a certain kind of lie that they're telling me. They're telling us that this is the biggest lie of all advertising. They're saying, join us and become unique. You are a different kind of individual. You're different from everybody else. You're not a conformist like the rest of them. You understand this ad. Maybe your parents don't, and all of that. And that you cannot be told what to do. They're telling all of that in the service of conformity, in the service of telling us what to do, in the service of selling us the same mass-produced product that they have to sell everybody else.
What are your thoughts about the whole Gap campaign of, Jack Kerouac wore khakis, taking all these icons of beat culture and hip culture and saying, hey, they wore khakis, you better buy them too.
Right. This is a totally clear example of that idea, join us and become unique. They show us that in effect they wore a uniform of nonconformity, and that we too can do what they do. I mean, to me, it only makes me never want to wear khakis. Khakis may be a fine pant unto themselves, but they've now become so associated with a sort of forced image of nonconformity and of artistic beatitude that it loses its meaning.
My guest is Leslie Savin, author of The Sponsored Life. Let's hear an example of an ad that she says is an ad that tries not to look like an ad. It's for Sprite.
In my 17 years on this planet, they have tried everything to get me to drink their drinks. They have subjected me to an infinite number of product shots, drink shots, mega superstars.
I love Juki.
Jingles.
Just one second.
And the type of people I have never, ever met in real life. All of this has led me to two conclusions.
I'm young!
One, when I'm thirsty, I gotta trust my gut. And two, I watch too much TV. Image is nothing. Thirst is everything. Obey your thirst. Sprite.
Leslie, what's happening visually in that ad?
Okay, there's a lot of things happening very, very quickly. So what we're seeing, we start by looking at a big pile of TV sets through what appears to be a TV repair shop. They're all on. They're all stacked up. And we see many shots within the TV of other TVs. There's close-ups of these sort of fake drinks called Jacko and Juki and Zinno, and they're being drunk in fake commercials by pretend celebrities. We see dancing girls who are singing a made-up jingle for one of these sodas. We're seeing beautiful babes beckoning us with another soda. We see a man jumping off a cliff. What's so interesting, and which is very hard to catch, you will see at one point a close-up of the rapper's eye. What he lands on, and what this whole campaign of three or four ads lands on, is this new slogan, image is nothing, obey your thirst. But the real point of it is to gain our trust. People are sick and tired of advertising, as even as they're addicted to it as well. But they have to transcend that usual response they have to advertising. The ad sort of picks up like a magnet the fact that we're tired of it and the fact that we don't trust it. Picks up all those little pieces of us that don't trust it, pulls it together in this attempt of an ad to tell us that it understands us and that it's with us.
Just as everyone is zapping out the ads on television with a remote control, ads are becoming the programs in some places. You know, you've got infomercials. You know, you confess in your book that you actually once bought a product from an infomercial. It was one of the Cher infomercials.
Yes.
You bought the shampoo that was being advertised.
I bought the whole package of hair care
products. What came over you?
I saw Cher. Her hair looks wonderful. I wanted my hair to be like hers. It's not that distant. It's sort of black and curly. What I wasn't realizing at the time was that she was wearing a wig. There's a certain mensch-like openness to Cher that I liked. And there she was sitting on the show with her what seemed to be her pals, a woman she introduced as her best friend. And she was sitting with Laurie Davis, who created these products, who is a very sort of hefty, mensch-like woman herself with no glamour quotient, really. And they were just a bunch of gals sitting around talking like we are often known to do. All too often, I mean, oh, your hair looks great, or oh, I love that sweater, and just this trivial, nothing conversation that is comforting just to hear it, and that can sort of lulled me, I think, as well. I thought, what the hell, I have to buy some shampoo and conditioner anyway, and it would probably total up to about the same, so I went for it. And it didn't work very well.
What did you get in the mailing? Did you get information about other Cher products?
That was the other part of their whole come on. Not, I mean, yes, of course, I got pamphlets, I got brochures, I got a video that's called "What the Heck Am I Going to Do with My Hair?" that shows you how to use their products, and there was always an enticement to buy more. Oh, there was a club. You can join a little club and then get a discount on the products if you order so many every month or every couple months. And, I mean, this is not unique to that product. This is what a lot of them do. But the other thing, not only do those sort of enticements make you more likely to buy a little more, they make you seem part of a family, part of a group, and part of a movement, whatever you want to call it. They keep you from feeling so alone.
So what do you think is the real message of the hip ironic ads?
The real message is that nobody opposes advertising anymore. That's the news of these ads. There was a time not too long ago when we were supposed to be very skeptical of advertising and everything, but that has begun to drain away, especially, I think, with the fall of the wall and so forth. And in fact, by showing people our characters that, that represent people who oppose advertising and oppose the mainstream culture, we are not only showing that no one opposes it anymore because we're co-opting them, taking them in, but we are maintaining a sense of tension, that there is something out there, there's some tension, there's some conflict, and that that tension and conflict is being resolved as that character in the ad itself begins to come around to the ad. And if he comes around in the ad to the idea of advertising, if only because the advertiser has the last word, the advertiser has the slogan and the logo at the end. And the ultimate message is that this is, that if there is any tension or any opposition to that mainstream commercial culture, nobody, you can't oppose it anymore, that advertising is cool, and that the tension, in fact, only works for it so that the advertiser can produce the resolution to the tension that the ad itself caused.
Leslie Savin, her new book, The Sponsored Life, is published by Temple University Press. This is Fresh Air.